Hi, my name is John. I'm a grateful believer, struggling with anger, control, and a smart mouth, which is a clever way of saying I'm surprisingly funny from time to time, and extremely sarcastic and abusive at others. I'm also finding victory over anxiety, depression, verbal and emotional abuse. Thanks. My story begins like many others. Actually, my family is the picture-perfect poster of 70s dysfunction, untold lies and secrets. I was born in Montreal, Canada, but you won't hear me say A or hoser. I don't remember too much of my early years, except the love of my grandma. She was loving, caring, passionate, and extremely giving of herself. It is also my belief that I bonded with her as my primary caregiver rather than my mother. By kindergarten, I had two younger sisters, and my mom was now looking after us. My dad was a mechanical contractor engineer, striving to make a name for himself while trying to provide more for his family. Early on, we made three major moves, from Montreal to Vancouver, BC, and then from BC to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. KL was glorious. In many ways, for me, it was an ideal place to grow up in the 70s. It was warm, exotic, and full of play opportunities, and I took advantage of these opportunities. In KL, my dad was hired by the Canadian government, and according to him, we moved up in society. We had a very prosperous life. My mother and dad enjoyed the pleasures of our new environment and bathed in that luxury that ensued. We seemed happy. We had money. We traveled extensively every summer, and we had live-in nannies and drivers and a host of benefits that were hard to fully appreciate at that early age. By grade four, it became clear to me that something was seriously wrong with this picture. I started to realize that all was not as it seemed. For one thing, it seemed that my parents were different than other parents, and they seemed to be leading separate yet parallel lives, or emotionally separate lives. It became increasingly clear we kids were just an annoyance that was accepted and tolerated. We were not really loved in a Partridge Family or Brady Bunch way. We were puppets. Brought up from time to time and paraded around and put on display. We need to be clean and quiet. And when we were not played with or held or touched, as both their mom and daddy did exactly what they wanted to do. My parents claimed to be Roman Catholic, so early on I had the joy of God beat out of me by the nuns. However, I did look good in white in my first communion. As a young boy, my parents constantly didn't ask how my day was. They never seemed to dig deep into who and what we were and what made us tick. We were on an emotional island that we couldn't easily escape or control. Our parents said they loved us. Well, at least my mom would say the words, but not really treat us in the way that young children needed attention and deep, emotional, undivided, and caring love. As long as we kept in line and we did the things our parents liked doing, life was good and we felt cared for. So, like a chameleon, I blended in and blended out. I really didn't cause too many waves. None of us kids did. And by grade six, I was becoming introverted as I was bottling my anger in an attempt to escape. I would immerse myself in TV and run away into a fantasy world. Luckily, I saw a movie called The Games. It was a story of marathon runners and their journey to the Olympic Games in Athens in 1960. At that moment, I knew I wanted to be an athlete and escape the real world and live out fantasy of extended youth. But youth is not always as made out to be. As a senior in high school, I found out that three of my closest friends in Malaysia had either committed suicide or were in jail for drug addictions. I guess the switch from fantasy to reality comes at a cost. By the time high school concluded, I had settled into my fantasy world of athletics, tennis, track, and field, where my newest addiction, volleyball. Luckily, I excelled and had multiple athletic scholarships, good grades, and parents willing to see me off to any number of good schools. I chose a local college, one in which I could start and excel in while being close to home, thinking that my folks might actually come and see my games, or at least take an interest. This marked a new chapter in my life, the collecting medals and women's stage of my life. As my athletic performances went, so too did my world. My grades, my depression, my control, my self-esteem, and the arrogance in my identity. As a freshman starter for the number one college team in the country, I had plenty of opportunities and I took advantage of them. I started drinking socially. My attitude and confidence and ego started to roll. Semi-celebrity status has its perks. We would be ushered in clubs, bars, drinks, and women flowed freely. I really didn't need to work that hard in school either. Numerous teachers were buying the lies, lay paper, no problem. It was at that time I started to notice my dad's drinking habits. He was a pleasant drinker, charming and clever and flirtatious, basically a high-functioning recreational alcoholic. My mom didn't drink, but there were plenty of social issues at play in her genetic makeup. Seemingly, I was already starting to follow my dad's footsteps and habits and living a lie. By the end of my college career, I'd received plenty of academic and athletic accolades, college all-stars, conference all-stars, conference titles, and a few national titles. But with it was a string of broken people in my wake. I now had an attitude and was well-suited to move on to the national team or a pro career and continue to feed my performance-based identity. My parents did come to one match in first year. Thankfully, we won. In retrospect, I was an utter mess during those years. I had some serious breakdowns in my personal life, and the kinks in my armor were clearly beginning to show. I was in trouble and didn't even know it. My partying, drinking, and womanizing was out of control. I'd have been emotionally, physically, mentally, and sexually abused in those years. My identity was all wrapped up in my performance and ego-driven identity. Clearly, I had no coping mechanisms and was starting to spin out of control. Depending on the team, the year, and the results, it was like a drug, and there was no end in sight. With no real focus other than a sport and partying, I was playing with the knowledge I could fill any empty void by drinking or any number of habits. I was a man-child in my mid-20s, and still a boy. After completing university, I was totally ill-prepared for life. Everyone had used me up. I trusted my coaches and teachers and professors. They got what they needed, and I was left holding the bag. I had been handed off to others my entire life and had never had to face any real responsibility. I was broken and I didn't even know it. One amazing thing happened that summer. After finishing my university playing career, I met my future wife in a small town in eastern Oregon. There was something about her I recognized as being unique and special. A kinship we both felt, but that had to wait for a few years. Fast forward almost 22 years. The me phase is in full swing. I'm now married to my dream girl from Eastern Oregon. We have been married for almost 18 years. We had two wonderful boys, a big old house, and I'm successful in my field. We have money, we have nice cars, good stuff, and I'm busy at work. By many standards, we are well off, but I have some secrets. All those issues of the past still haunt and plague me. They just morphed into different vehicles. Early on in a relationship, I had issues of sharing my feelings in an effective and loving way, certainly not what a young newlywed would be expecting from her new husband. During grad school, I became obsessed with my own success and graduating top of my class, and after grad school, feeding on that success, I became a workaholic. Funny how the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. My selfishness, sarcasm, and abusive tendencies were surfacing and in full swing. I was controlling and completely addicted to my own needs. Replaced was the drinking, partying, girls, playing volleyball with the false gods of wealth and consumption, firmly fixed in my life. I was spending money with no real horizon, nor limit in my pursuits or its negative results. The sins of my parents were clearly reflected in my actions. I just wasn't conscious aware of the damage I was doing. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be, Matthew 6:21. I was accumulating stuff at an alarming rate. As an architect and project designer, I had an eye for items that were well-designed, beautiful, elegant, and proportioned. At home or at work, my obsessions had no boundaries. And what better for a person with control issues than to be at the helm of control of the design of a building, its aesthetics, the materials, the interior spaces, everything down to the color and furniture, a perfect choice for a creative obsessive. Plus, I wanted well-designed buildings. I no doubt was hard on my staff. The terribly sad thing was I really didn't know how to be a caring, loving, or empathetic person or a nurturing father to my young boys. Certainly not the father I wanted to be or the father the night before our wedding night that I promised to never be. All the positive modeling of my parents exhibited, well, it wasn't helping. My wife confronted me numerous times, and I responded. I did not hear or try to understand what it was she was trying to tell me. She had had enough. This was not the life that she had hoped for all those years ago. Partnership was not in my vocabulary. I was doing everything I could to sabotage our lives and our future, as well as a boy's relationship with me and with her. She was planning a divorce. I was in denial. I was aware we had issues and certainly was not taking ownership. My eye was not on the ball, as Townsend or Clown might say. So the reality of my many poor choices came to a head. I was served divorce papers 4 days before our 18th anniversary. She wanted it all, the house, the boys, supervised parenting. I had to act quickly. No doubt she felt in my selfish mode, I would roll over, take the cars, the art, and the stuff I wanted to move on. But hold on, I'm not going to roll over. So started the ugly. Lawyers and some real fights. So over the next few months, I struggled. Why me? How did this get to the point? How could she? I'm a good parent. I'm a good dad. I'm not abusive. So I dug my heels in, and our lawyers fought. Admitting you have a problem is often the most difficult first step. Thankfully, at the time, some very important events and situations began to unfold themselves. Firstly, I asked my wife if I could attend Rolling Hills Church with her and the boys. Certainly not typical for divorcing couples. The all-in sermons last summer were powerful, and they moved me. New and hidden and unexpected emotions surfaced that had long been dormant, hidden away from those nuns those many years ago. God was moving in me, and slowly, but he was moving. He began to talk and guide me. I also began to seek counsel and began to read a lot. It's amazing when someone is severely depressed how little sleep they can survive on. My wake-up call was 4:19 every morning. So I read two or three books every week, 20, 30, 50 books over the next few months. And they ranged in content from relationships to Buddhism, happiness, parenting, books by Gottman, etc. But something amazing was happening. I was getting new skills I had never received growing up, skills in how to deal with my boys and how to treat people. And although the counseling and a new perspective from church was helping, I was still in a serious state of depression, and we were on an expensive divorce path and spending money on lawyers at an alarming rate. Additionally, I was driving into my very own pity party. Divorce for some men can be unbearable. I was at the bottom, exhausted and beaten up. Getting out of bed and facing the days was becoming difficult to impossible. I had gone from 217 pounds to 173 pounds in less than 2 months. Plus, I was averaging no more than 4 hours sleep a night. I was exhausted and no longer functioning effectively. I had to make some decisions, and I'm good at finding creative solutions to difficult problems. It was less about the divorce and more the fact that I'd failed. Failing was really not my vocabulary. I didn't like losing when I was in university, and I didn't like losing now. How egocentric of me. And when men make a decision to end their life, they're statistically pretty good at it. I made my goodbyes in the least obvious way I could. The end had to be an accident. It had to, so that my family could be financially secure. The internet is an amazing thing if you want to find something out. My plan was well in place and well figured out. My therapist sensed something was up. As he put it, I had a new calm. He asked me if I had any intention of hurting myself, and his parting words were, "Your boys need a father." For some reason, God looked down on me and smiled And over the next few days, my life changed for the better and forever. It seemed God was patient with me, just like he was with Gideon and Peter. God showed me that the universe does not spin around me, and that love actually begins with others, and that he does things in our lives that are calculated and planned. He has a plan, a sick dog, a trip to Dove Lewis, and a lesson of putting others first. A few days later, a revealing phone call and conversation with my mom, a series of texts with my sister, and a critical phone conversation with my divorcing wife, and somehow the winds of change began to blow. When you're at the bottom of a barrel sinking and looking up, it's amazing how clear the path becomes and how willing you are to make the necessary changes. On a lonely rainy night during Thanksgiving week, a year and a week ago, I decided to go to CR12. I arrived at CR wet and hungry and was greeted by some of those people. And I remember thinking, what am I doing here? But most importantly, I was wholeheartedly greeted by Val, David, Daniel, Greg, and a host of others. So I ate. The lesson was moral. It was a great lesson. And it put perspective on my situation. I was committed, and I knew I'd come home to my new family. I kept coming back. I was welcomed and connected right away. And for the first time in my life, I started taking ownership of my own issues and habits. Carolyn stepped in and helped me as well, recommending some Christian books. One problem was, I was not really a practicing, fully committed Christian. I was, however, seeking truth and knowledge. Sure, I believed in Jesus lived and existed. Sure, I wanted to believe in a higher power. But I also did not believe that he was necessarily that power. But I was committed to walking a new path. They who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. His understanding is unsearchable. Isaiah 40:31. With time, I became more focused. I started really listening to the stories of the men in my group. I was seeing and hearing how God impacted their lives. Soon I began to care for these men as true friends. You see, I had loads of buddies. Some of these buddies were whispering in my ear. New joys are out there. Men who wanted my marriage to fail. Men who wanted me to join them in drinking and chasing women, to go back to the life I used to lead. But I needed to dig my way out, regardless of my pending divorce, regardless of my parenting rights, and regardless of my belief systems. I needed to change my past pattern and try something different. So the decision was made. The hurt and the hurting cycle was stopping with me. One, the main hope was that I and my boys might someday learn how to be fully functioning Christian human beings. So I started a step study. I was going to take a chance. And with God's help, I wanted to change. And change a path my boys would no doubt follow. I wanted for them to be able to feel emotions, to have empathy, as well as understanding how women need to be treated through modeling and how to treat others with kindness and respect, and not parental modeling that I was currently practicing. Somehow, my hope was that my wife and I might find a way to reconnect or reconcile, but that seemed highly unlikely and very improbable. Regardless, I started to do the work, and the new life was started. I was trusting in Jesus, and he was showing me his love for me. In a few short weeks, he'd reached down and touched me. He is love and he saved me. Sadness and depression turned to hope and unseen reality. With faith as my guide, I now trusted in God, and I was walking a new path and creating new patterns and a new pattern of life for all eternity. Behold, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and the rivers and in the desert. Isaiah 43:19. Fast forward almost a year. I'm completed my step study and I'm wholly committed to Jesus Christ, CR, and my recovery. CR 12 put clarity and brought me perspective. It gave me the ability to dig deep into the hurts and habits that had defined me for far too long. I was an addict, addicted to my own needs. I was highly manipulative and completely specific and self-absorbed in my many wants and desires. The good news is, CR brought me out of denial and made me face what I did not want to see, It changed my thinking, and I evolved, and I am still evolving. Shortly after completing my step study, I was fortunate enough to be able to attend Summit, a leadership training in CR. At Summit, my faith was cemented. The fellowship I received, the lessons and the testimonies I heard, the stories of change will stay with me forever. The highlight of the trip was when I nailed on the cross the baggage and pains I knew that would plague me for years to come. I released these issues and committed myself to move on. The event was the single most difficult and painful moment in my recent history, but I was freed. Freed to pass on what God was doing in my life to my boys and my family. I am thankful and grateful to CR as it has helped me find a successful means of coping with my boys while providing me with a family I always wanted and dreamed of some 19 years ago when two young hopefuls were setting out on a new adventure. I am truly blessed. I am finding victory over the worship of money and wealth and the self-perpetuated cycle of consumption and indulgence spending and its associated ideologies. I've been free from these habits for some 16 months. Additionally, I have sold off a number of items, including art, furniture, glass, of decent value, as well as other items that have no importance to anyone but me. And I'm now investing into myself, my family, my church, and this ministry. I'm also reaping what I am sowing and learning to love and live and love others while growing in generosity while doing God's work. Given, it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you will use it, it will be measured back to you. Luke 6:38. My work has also been more fulfilling and more manageable. I do not travel every week to LA or San Jose like I used to, and I'm better equipped to handle my stress and my workmates. As I continue to find peace within myself, I'm learning to be a better parent. As I continue to work towards being the parent and the father I always knew that was inside of me, I'm continuing to raise the bar higher than I could ever have imagined. And recently, I traveled up to Canada and have come to terms with my father for the emotional abuse and neglect I felt as a child. As I touched on earlier, over the past year, the relationship with my wife has been restored and has been thriving for almost 9 months. We recently had family pictures done, and the photographer commented, "You guys act like newlyweds." Unexpectedly this summer, she asked me if she could attend CR with me. I was pleased, and I'm proud of the work she is now doing. Recently, we celebrated our 19th anniversary. I was living back in the house, and we spent together with the boys in a new and more loving and fulfilled partnership in the eyes of God. His strength helped me listen to the voices in my head. In closing, CR has changed my life. I'm happy, centered, and loved. God has changed my future. When I started Step City, I was not a Christian, and I am now. Essentially, he changed my mind with my perspective. I was transformed by the renewing of my mind with the love of God and his direct intervention and guidance. If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone, and the new has come. 2 Corinthians 5:17. The Bible calls that step being born again. For me, it was a chance to dive into my past, look at the habits and hurts that have defined me. God used CR12 to help change me. I turned over a new leaf, and in doing so, I got a new life and a fresh start. The Spirit of God gives us strength and vitality and the desire and power to do what is right. As the Spirit of the Lord works within us, we become more and more like Him. Romans 8:9-12. No matter how dark the situation, God can turn it around. No matter how hopeless life seems, God brings hope. In closing, all I can say is, hope and change begins with new thinking. Take the chance. You will not be disappointed. Thank you for letting me share my story.